In the global competition over semiconductors, the U.S. is trying to catch up. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. For more than a year now, Congress has been sitting on legislation to get more semiconductor chip factories built in the U.S. This is a technology where the U.S. once led, but has now lost both market share and its spot on the technological cutting edge. After languishing for months, the bill looks like it's getting enough bipartisan support to maybe pass. Marketplace's Nova Sappho is here with more. Hi, Nova.
Good morning, Sabri.
You know, a lot of people agree that we need to build more high-tech chips here at home. They go into so many different things. What has been the holdup in Congress?
Yeah, and in fact, both chambers have passed their own versions of this legislation already, but they've been working on reconciling differences between the House and Senate versions. And if you really want to go back, Sabri, Washington has been working on this issue for about 2 years now. So the holdup in this latest case was from Republicans in the Senate. They objected to an unrelated reconciliation bill Democrats wanted to pass that included new taxes. Democratic Senator Joe Manchin scuttled those provisions, and Republicans are now signaling support to move ahead with the CHIPS legislation.
And this latest version of the bill, how exactly would it encourage more chip building in the U.S.?
So this is a narrower bill than what Democrats originally hoped to pass. It provides $52 billion in incentives and subsidies to big chip-making companies, so they'll build foundries in the U.S. The White House, lawmakers in Washington have all called this a national security issue because what the pandemic exposed is that there are just too few factories, which the entire globe relies upon to build chips. And countries are competing now to entice chip makers to invest in factories within their borders. The Biden administration has been warning that we're running out of time to compete with those other countries, and we're expecting votes in the Senate later today to try to move this legislation forward, Sabri.
All right. Marketplace's Nova Sappho, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
The Federal Reserve has, as we know, been raising interest rates aggressively to fight inflation. That is starting to seriously cool the housing market. Fewer home sales, fewer new homes starting construction, and surveys of home builder sentiment plunging. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has more.
Everett Burns is 24, lives in Queens, New York, and owns his own marketing business. He and his girlfriend were looking to buy their first home after seeing their rent double in the past few years, but
interest rates going up was really like the nail in the coffin of like, this needs to go on the back burner.
Mortgage rates are up about 70% since January. Home prices are up more than 20% year over year. Meanwhile, construction costs have soared and builder sentiment is down in the dumps, says Robert Dietz at the National Association of Home Builders. I asked him, are we already in a housing market recession?
Oh, I think we are.
Dietz points out that with fewer people in the market to buy, there'll be less upward pressure on home prices, and they may even fall in some markets. Everett Burns has heard about this possibility.
I really do see prices for housing coming down if we have as bad of a recession as some people are predicting.
But he doesn't think they'll come down enough to make a starter home affordable anytime soon. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
All right, let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.2%. Dow S&P and NASDAQ futures also all up in the 7 to 9 tenths percent range, with the Dow future up 223 points. 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.997%. And the average price of gasoline, according to AAA, $4.49.5. That's about 50 cents lower than last month's peak. Netflix is trying to stem losses from password sharing. It's testing out a policy in Latin America where it would charge people a small fee for using their Netflix account outside their home. It's a small sign of how Netflix is handling a slump in subscribers. Today, we will get a much closer look at how that's playing out when Netflix reports earnings. Savannah Marr has more.
When people were stuck at home with nothing to do, they practically threw money at streaming services. But back in April, Netflix's first quarter results gave the industry a wake-up call.
Oh my goodness, they're not only not growing by 10, they're losing subscribers.
Michael Pachter, an analyst at Wedbush Securities, says the streaming boom had stalled. And so had a decade of rapid growth for the most successful service out there.
Netflix has to acknowledge they're no longer a hypergrowth company.
Pachter says the company needs to pivot from focusing on growing its huge subscriber base to retaining it. To do that, Netflix will have to tackle subscription cycling, says Eleanor Patterson, who studies media trends at Auburn University.
Where people go through and like, okay, Stranger Things is back. I'm going to go back to Netflix. I'm going to cancel my Paramount Plus.
Especially as record inflation causes people to tighten their entertainment budgets.
How do you get people to be continuous subscribers?
Patterson says one tool Netflix is trying out is spacing out episodes of popular shows like Stranger Things and Ozark over a few weeks rather than all at once. You know, like they used to do on cable TV.
Again, it's like everything new is old and everything old is new again.
Another old trick Netflix is borrowing, selling ads to bring in revenue. Paul Erickson is a research analyst with Parks Associates.
There's only so many consumers out there that are willing to pay full price.
And pay it continuously. But by year's end, Netflix subscribers will have the option of downgrading to a cheaper ad-supported tier rather than leaving altogether. Erickson says we can also expect Netflix and other services to trim content budgets and double down on what's most popular.
It's going to make everyone get smarter, sharper, and more insightful about the people that they serve as their customers than, let's say, during the pandemic.
When we couldn't afford to be so picky. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Our producers are Jarrett Dang, Meredith Gerritsen, Ariana Rosas, Sarah Hawkins, Stephen Ryan, Alex Schroeder, and Erica Soderstrom. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.